Welcome back to Two Geeks at the Movies. I'm your co-host Chris, and as always, I'm joined by my brother and co-host Rob. What's up, Rob?
What better way to celebrate a few days after Halloween by talking about the movie Halloween?
Yeah, this is typical Two Geeks fashion that we're wrapping up spooky October in November.
I'll probably edit this and post it by like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we really dropped the ball on this, but Halloween was 2 days ago, and we're just now getting around to recording our final spooky October movie, which is Halloween. Would have been real nice if I had this out on Saturday, but so what?
Yeah. Things kept happening, and we kept going, we can record it this night. And then we were just like, the show is shit.
We can just get out of it's garbage. Halloween. It's fine.
And we're talking about the original 1978 Halloween, because I believe there's been now three movies titled Halloween in the Halloween series.
Yeah, that's confusing as hell.
We'll get into where this movie fits in the timeline here.
And you beat me to the introduction. I wanted to say that our movie this week was John Carpenter of Mars, but...
Damn it.
But that joke's so stupid, it doesn't even make any sense. So obviously Halloween, directed by John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. And... he's an interesting director. I know we've talked about him. We've done quite a few movies by John Carpenter. We've done They Live. We've done The Thing. This might be number three. I was looking over his filmography, and it's so wild because there's some, so a lot of horror stuff, but then you got Big Trouble in Little China and Starman, and even a few weeks ago we mentioned Memoirs of the Invisible Man.
The thing, he kind of branched out into these other, kind of sci-fi and Memoirs of the Invisible Man. I don't think I would call that horror by any means. A lot of comedy too,
and like The Escape from New York and Escape from LA, those aren't horror movies. They're
action,
weird action movies.
Definitely comedy in a lot of his movies. Halloween is a lot more straight up horror, but Big Trouble in Little China and even Escape from New York, there's some comedy in it. Mm-hmm. So he's an interesting dude. He kind of petered out later on in his career, but he was on kind of a tear for a while.
Yeah,
in the 70s and 80s.
And I love that he does the music, too, which, again, I know we've talked about that before, but that's so interesting that he composes and he writes. And, I mean, if you look at his IMDb page, it's jump to soundtrack, writer, music department, composer, actor. It's just like on and on. He's done camera and electrical department. He's just like a guy who's kind of done it all. And the picture of his on his IMDb picture, he looks like Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka.
Yeah, he looks like I don't even want to say kindly old grandpa. He looks like Grandpa Joe if he had like a little bit of evil in his eye. Like Grandpa Joe had seen some shit.
I was gonna say that's he just spent Grandpa his whole life Joe. In bed. Grandpa Joe is a piece of shit. So this movie, as we say every week, I don't know a lot about horror movies. I didn't grow up on horror movies, particularly slasher type movies like this. I had never seen Halloween. I had never seen a Halloween. And I'm not well-versed in Friday the 13th. I've seen probably one of the Nightmare on Elm Streets. So, I mean, when you come to those three always stick in my mind as sort of the 80s, 70s and 80s slasher movies.
Yeah.
And I'm just not well versed in them. So this was interesting for me to take a crack at this. I assume you've seen this before.
I have seen this before.
Have you seen a lot of the Halloween movies?
I have seen, I'm trying to think now, I've seen the first of the original three. And then I saw David Gordon Green's, I saw Joseph Gordon-Levitt's remake. No, David Gordon Green's, sort of reboot. It takes place, it sort of retcons things and is a direct sequel to the original.
Okay.
So it kind of Superman returns it a little bit.
Okay. So
it goes the original Halloween and then his Halloween.
Oh, that's interesting.
Sort of ignores Halloween 2 forward from there, because I don't even know how many in the original continuity there are. And then there's Rob Zombie made 2 that sort of rebooted it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And I heard the first one is sort of worthwhile and the second one gets pretty garbage, but.
Wasn't there one called like Halloween H2O or something like that? Is that a thing?
Yes, which I believe
was that.
It took place underwater, which is why it's no. I think it was 20 years after the original, so it must have been 1998. Okay. But yeah, I'm not super well versed in the entire series, but I'd seen this one quite a few times, and I actually like this one quite a bit, and I liked the Joseph or David Gordon Green. I'm gonna keep doing the Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Now that one did Danny McBride write it with him?
Yeah, they co-wrote it together.
But was he in it?
No, he's not in it.
Okay,
and there's not a ton of comedy. There's one little boy in it who's being babysat, and he's really, really funny. But it's mainly straight horror and more in line with the tone of this movie, for sure.
I would love to see the end of that movie if they like pulled off Michael Myers' mask and it was just Danny McBride and his long curly hair.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Kenny Powers' hair.
Oh man.
So what did you think? You've been your first time seeing this.
It was fine.
Okay.
I mean, I wasn't blown away by it. I tried to put myself in the shoes of somebody watching this in 1978, because obviously it's hard to look at it all these years later and try and be wowed by it, because it's fairly simplistic. It's got some neat things going on in it, but there's nothing that it was one of those things as I watched, I was like, how did this spawn 8 sequels and 3 reboots? And, you know, I just didn't quite get it completely, but I didn't dislike it. It was fun. I mean, it was just okay, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of this, I shouldn't say the same way. I'm the same way in terms of the first time I saw it, I was older. I think I was in college. Mm-hmm. So I was like late teens, early 20s. And I feel like it was a movie I wish I would have seen when I was 12.
Sure.
In the same way that I remember seeing Nightmare on Elm Street when I was, it was probably the one time you saw that movie as a teenager, and I was real little, and it scared the absolute hell out of me. Mm-hmm. And Halloween, I was older. It wasn't real scary. So I had to sort of put myself in that mindset of, what movies had come before this, you know, what did audiences think of at the time? And this is a movie that I read. It was made for like, I think 300,000.
I think so.
And made like 60 or 70 million, something like that. So it was one of the, in terms of budget to total box office, it was one of the most successful movies, I think even now, of all time. And I think it was just unlike something that people had seen before.
Right. It seems so commonplace now.
Right.
Because there's so, I mean, there have been so many movies, obviously, in this series and the Friday the 13th series and shadowy ripoffs of just, you know, slashers stalking teens.
I know what you did last summer.
Exactly. And it's become almost like a joke. I mean, it's been done so many times and parodied so many times that it's such a part of the common lexicon that, yeah, to see it for the first time in 1978 must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, Scream is literally a movie that works as a horror movie, and it's funny and it's scary, but it's, you know, it's all about these tropes and kind of poking at these tropes that a movie like this pioneered in a big way.
Right.
And I know, so we should mention that there's a movie called Black Christmas directed by Bob Clark. Do you know about this?
I know that there was some connection to, because doesn't it have a killer that's similar?
Yes.
In sort of like no motivation given, just stalking and killing.
Stalking and killing a group of young women in a sorority house. And it came out 3 or 4 years, I think, before this.
Okay.
Interestingly enough. And I think it had a lot of kind of the POV shots of the killer. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that one, and it's a little bit messier. It's not as slick and polished as this.
Okay.
And I don't think it was as successful. So I think a lot of people go, oh, Halloween came out after that one, and that one was the first one, but which I totally get. But I think Halloween was the first movie to sort of hit big with these sorts of ideas and this sort of plot. And like you said, the teenagers being picked off, which is so commonplace now, but to an audience in 1978, I think it was pretty shocking.
Yeah. And I think that I'd read something about Black Christmas that I think that John Carpenter, I was friendly with or talked to Bob Clark about what he did with Black Christmas. And so I think that there is that, not just an assumed link, but that there's actually like a direct influence. Like, I think he kind of talked to him and tried to help him get an idea of how to do this with that, again, that sort of unseen, or not unseen, but sort of motivationless killer.
Yeah.
So.
And Bob Clark, we should mention, directed Black Christmas and A Christmas Story.
No kidding.
No.
Two movies. I was hoping that was
further apart.
Really true. Yeah. I think they remade Black Christmas maybe last year.
Yeah, I don't know if it was last year, within the last few years, for sure.
I'm just looking at it. Is Margot Kidder's in it?
Margot Kidder was in the original.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at, not the new one. I think Margot Kidder might have died before they did the other one. But
is Margot Kidder dead?
I think she died. She was a real mess in the end. Somebody found her like naked in their trash, missing all her teeth.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she died in 2018.
Oh, that's sad.
That is sad. I did too. But I digress.
Yeah, let's not get sad about Margot.
Go down a real weird hole here. Again, as long as we're talking about background of it, I guess there was these movie financiers who basically saw Assault on Precinct 13 that John Carpenter had done and sought him out to do this. And they just tried to basically had an idea of young girls babysitting kids and having a killer stalk them. And I think he sort of rolled in that idea of, well, let's do it on Halloween and call it that, because I think they were going to call it something else, like Babysitter Murderer or something.
Yeah, the Babysitter Murders.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. And honestly, I think the Halloween setting has at least something to do with the success of it, because it is sort of Halloween rolls around and there's fucking literally a movie called Halloween. Right. And you're like, oh, Halloween. Let's watch Halloween. That's an enjoyable film.
And it's funny because I actually, I watched it about a month ago. And as I was trying to remember some of my thoughts about it today, I couldn't remember if there was really that much that had to do with Halloween on it. You know, there's these, you know, kids being babysat, but the kids aren't out trick or treating. Like there's some mention of Halloween and I think they might have some kids in costumes somewhere. But as I was thinking about it, I was like, it really doesn't have that much to do with Halloween, except that it occurs on Halloween night.
Yeah.
And the opening scene has more, because I think he's dressed in the clown costume, but.
Yeah, there's that. There's some kids trick-or-treating, but it seems to be at like 10:30 in the morning. It's in like broad daylight.
That's one of the most striking things about this movie to me, is I had a concept of what it was going to be based on. Again, pop culture and the knowledge of these types of movies, I could not believe how much of it took place in broad daylight. I kept just waiting in the end it does, the bulk of it takes place at night, but one of my notes just says so much daytime. Because I'd seen, for years I'd seen that, you know, in memes and things online, you would see the picture of him kind of peeking around the hedges at her.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure that was some sort of a joke where somebody was just dressed up in a Michael Myers mask peeking around some hedges and they took a picture and made a meme out of it. So when that occurs in this movie, I was like, why is it 12 noon? What the hell is going on here?
But like, once we get to the meat of the movie, once he starts taking people out, it's at night.
Oh, sure. And I wouldn't expect anything less from it, but that's, you get that sense of a horror movie. Even you think of something like Seven,
yeah,
where there are parts where it's daytime, but they just blur that. I mean, it's dark, it's rainy, it's gloomy. This is just like, hey, just go outside in the morning and turn the camera on and let's film this thing. And again, I know it's a different era and you take what you could get at that time, but
yeah, you got to think somebody's walking out onto their driveway to pick up the newspaper and they just see him just kind of peeking around the bush, but like from down the street, they're like, what the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, what's going on down there?
So we mentioned that it was made on a real low budget, and mm-hmm. I was reading that a lot of the actors and actresses just wore their own clothes.
Okay.
And literally Jamie Lee Curtis's wardrobe was bought for $100 at a JCPenney's, which is a lot of fun.
Every cent of that is on the screen.
And Donald Pleasance's clothes were bought at Mervyn's.
That is interesting.
No, not really.
No. I know, but the Jamie Lee Curtis thing is interesting. That Jamie Lee Curtis, I know that this is a thing that gets made fun of a lot with any sort of film and TV, is people older than teenagers playing teenagers. Mm-hmm. And I believe Jamie Lee Curtis, this was her first role, and she was, I believe, 20 years old when she filmed it.
Okay.
So she was just a few years outside of being a teenager. But there's a part where she and her two friends are walking down the street, and the way they look and the way they're dressed, they look like a couple of 35-year-olds going to book club.
Going to a book club?
Yeah. Like, it wasn't even close to teenagers. It's like...
Just that really long skirt.
Yeah. Well, and she's so conservatively dressed in this.
Yeah.
Which is interesting when you look at some of the unusual themes about sexuality and things that happen in this movie, and we'll get into all that, but
She's much more, and again, this becomes a trope throughout these sorts of movies going forward, of her sort of being the more virginal, the more innocent of the group, and she's sort of the final girl who survives. And I really like her in this movie.
Okay.
I think she sells it. I think she seems genuinely invested in the kids and their safety, and even just like having them have a good time and carving some pumpkins. Like, she just, there's a sweetness to her, and you do, I buy her being like a little bit awkward around boys. And I think one of her friends is talking about how they told some boy at school that she was interested in him, and she's sort of, you know, just aghast at this and so upset about it. I like her in this movie.
Yeah.
And her friends are a little bit more absurd in their acting styles, and they're younger women, and they're not these like polished actors, but I think she feels real to me, and I think she's a big part of why this movie works.
And it's easy to see how she would become a big star after this, because she does handle it really well. So you mentioned that she seems like sort of like shy around boys and the sort of virginal one. It's interesting in this movie that basically anytime somebody does anything sexual, they get murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like you said, that's become sort of a trope in movies. They play that up to a humorous effect in The Cabin in the Woods, which is a funny, you know.
Yeah.
But they, and obviously they talk about that in Scream, but I don't know what, as I was watching it, I was trying to decide if they were trying to say something by that, or if it was just, this is, you know, sex and murder is what's going to sell this movie.
I think that's more of what it was, but I think a lot of critics read into it, and maybe there's something deeper down in John Carpenter's subconscious about this. I know he's come out and said that wasn't his intent. He didn't mean it as a quote-unquote morality play.
Okay.
I think it was more... I think that's what was going to sell.
Yeah.
And I think that's still what was going to sell. I don't think people making these sorts of movies now or in the 80s and 90s were like, oh, you know what? We really want to teach young people a lesson about being chaste.
Right.
I don't think the director of Friday the 13th was like thinking about, you know, premarital sex.
Right. And I think it became more and more gratuitous as time went on with Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, there is something there for people to sort of pick apart. Is this movie misogynistic? Is this movie, feminist? Like, there's all these different ways that I think you could read it. And I don't necessarily think John Carpenter, as a younger director, was thinking through, like, okay, I want to have some complexity to this, some real gray areas. I think he was aiming to make a movie that was sort of thrilling and creepy and scary, and would freak audiences out.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the camera work is just the camera following people walking around town during that whole first half of the movie where it's daytime.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of wasted time. It wasn't exactly a tight script. They were just like, here's Lori walking to school for 5 minutes. That was cracking me up. In her room, she has a poster that it's kind of like a, it looks like something you would get as a souvenir from my art museum. And it says James Ensor on it in big letters. But okay. It doesn't really have a good example of what the artwork was. And I don't know why it caught my eye, but it did enough that I looked up who that was. Mm-hmm. And it, very interesting. He was a Belgian painter who would paint these just horrifying, like, skeleton-filled paintings.
Okay.
And I thought that was really an interesting kind of, I mean, Easter egg before people were looking for Easter eggs. But again, I don't know if that was by mistake or if there was somebody who worked on the movie who just said, oh, I'm interested in this guy because he's creepy and he did horrific paintings. So they threw that up in the background and just waited for, 40 years until I looked it up.
You know what they thought? They thought, hey, you know what? 42 years on, some jackass doing a stupid podcast is going to look this up. James Ensor?
Ensor. Ensor. Huh. Yeah.
I did not know that.
So there you go. And the other Easter egg that I thought was fun is at some point somebody is watching, I think it's when she's babysitting the kids and they're going to watch a scary movie. And they're watching The Thing from Another World.
Yeah,
which is a 1951 movie that I think was the inspiration for The Thing.
Yeah.
That he would do. Because The Thing came after this, correct? Well after this.
Yes, it was mid-80s, I think. Yeah. It was the same year as E.T., 83? 83?
Okay, let's see. 82 is The Thing.
82. It even has that same, and we might have talked about this when we did that podcast, it has that same kind of opening when it says The Thing, it's almost like the font and title burns through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this started that movie trope where a horror movie, whenever anybody is watching a scary, even if it's like 2020, they're always watching a black and white movie from 1957.
That is true.
I recently watched, I'd never seen Lords of Salem, which is a Rob Zombie movie. And the main character, I can't remember what movie it is, but she's watching a fucking black and white horror movie one night. I'm just like, no, she is not watching that. What is happening here?
That is really funny.
Yeah. Okay, this is a total random aside, but
okay.
The girl that Jamie Lee Curtis is babysitting is an actress named Kyle Richards.
Okay.
And in Assault on Precinct 13, there's a young actress named Kim Richards who's in it.
Okay.
And they're sisters. And they are both on one of the Real Housewives shows.
No way.
And it's either Beverly Hills or OC. It's one of them that Mo watches. And when
like you're throwing Mo under the bus here. Like you're not sitting there watching it.
No, with her. I watch them with her too. New York's the best, by the way, if anybody's listening.
Oh my God.
But it's funny just because when I watch it with her, I'm just like, oh my God, it's this sweet, cute little girl from Halloween. And now she's just this obnoxious socialite in Beverly.
Do you kind of recognize her from it? I mean, does it? It's not.
Oh, yeah. You can tell it's her for sure. How
funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a weird one.
That's a fun little thing. She might I think I read that she's going to be in, because they're Joseph Gordon-Levitt in his sequels, he's bringing back some of the original actors, and I think she's going to have a small part in it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, that opening scene is kind of fun. It's very, like, you've talked a little bit earlier about the point of view camera. It's kind of a voyeuristic look, and you don't know that you're looking through the eyes of a child until that scene's over.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. But it starts with Michael Myers as a, what, like 6 or 7 year old kid. And he, yeah. I think he murders his sister. Mm-hmm. And does he murder the boyfriend too? I can't remember.
Maybe it's just the sister. Yeah, just the sister.
But again, it starts there where he sees the sister go upstairs with her boyfriend, and he comes down 30 seconds later, like getting dressed. I was like, that guy is quick on the trigger. But yeah. It's fast.
Okay, gets the job done.
But that was kind of an interesting scene. And then when they finally stop Michael Myers, and he's like, you realize that it's a kid, and you've been seeing through the camera as though looking out of a mask where you have the eyes cut out. Mm-hmm. And he's wearing like a creepy clown costume, which I suppose is to represent that this was Halloween night when.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that they did that, and then I would have thought that they would carry that through. Maybe as an adult he would be dressed as like a creepy clown stalking people, but
nope.
But he wasn't. Yeah. I can't remember where he came up with the mask.
I feel like he gets it at a hardware store.
Because, yeah, I remember the hardware store. Doesn't he get spray paint and sprays white? But I
didn't,
did the mask come from there?
Shit, I'm literally already forgetting.
Yeah.
Maybe
it was more of like a Target where you could get a whole bunch of stuff.
I mean, we have a super Target up here that's just like the best in the world. You know what the mask is in reality.
Right, it's Captain Kirk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They obviously tailored it and changed it. And
sure.
Spray painted it, but because when I look at it, I know that's what it is, and when I'm looking at it, you can't see it, really.
You kind of can, though, once...
Really?
I think you can.
I've never been able to really think oh yeah, that's Shatner.
I do love the joke. Is it Baby Driver? Where they tell the guy to get Michael Myers' mask and he comes back with a bunch of Austin Powers masks?
Yeah.
It's such a great joke. It's
really good.
Oh, man. What else? Oh, we've got Donald Pleasance. Who apparently runs through several of these movies, he's the psychiatrist that sees Michael Myers. And
yeah, I think he's been a psychiatrist since he was a kid.
Right.
And eventually just like totally loses faith and like stops trying to help him. And is like, this guy's fucking crazy. We cannot let him get back to his hometown.
I wish they had done, and maybe this happens later on, maybe they flesh out more about Michael later on, but I kind of felt like he was a kid and he killed his sister and he looked kind of comatose when they took his mask off and took him away. And then you see him as an adult and he's just out killing people and this guy is professing what an evil, heartless monster he is. I kind of want to know what happened in between those two. Like, how did he come to that conclusion? Because I don't think they give us a lot of information about that. I was like, if you had him as a kid, I mean, you know, obviously there's, you can imagine a lot of things, but it would have been interesting to know, maybe see a few scenes of him growing up or in the institution, kind of figure out what, you know, seeing how they were trying to help him or seeing him, I don't know, killing rats or whatever he might be doing in there that made him think he was a psycho. You know what I mean?
Killing rats.
Well, you know how they talk about these serial killers as kids usually hurting animals. And obviously he's already killed his sister. So maybe rats are a step down, but.
I
don't know.
But then they wouldn't have had all those scenes of Lori and her friends walking around town.
That's true. I like those a lot.
Those are good.
They were walking home from school in one part.
On Halloween.
On Halloween.
I don't know. I kind of like that we don't really get that backstory. Uh-huh. And it's just sort of, we don't, like you said, it's a motivationalist killer.
Right. And I'm on board with that. It was more just that idea that we saw him as a kid kind of acting freaky and killed his sister. And then we jump ahead in time to where this guy is declaring him, you know, Satan incarnate. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it just seemed like a big leap to me. And I guess it was enough that he said it and then we just buy into it and go on with the movie. That's great. But I don't know. I just felt like there was a little bit lacking in development that could have been, even if you weren't giving him motivation or explaining, you know, oh, he acted like this because his mother, you know, tickled him too much or whatever the problem was. I didn't necessarily need the why he was, but I would have liked to know more about what kind of a sick freak he was that they were so freaked out when he was escaping that Loomis is, you know, just hanging out in his old house, desperate to find him. He really didn't do much in this movie. He was kind of useless.
He's very much the harbinger and gives you the, it's not even so much like exposition. Cause like you said, there's not a lot of, this is what happened and this is why he is the way he is. Most of the time when you see him, he's the, you know, the personification of evil. There's a lot of that in him talking to the sheriff, and how they need to be on the lookout for him and how serious a danger this is. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely some of that. He comes in at the end and shoots him, but beyond that, it is just a lot of giving the audience,
right,
telling the audience what Michael is, and what Michael is just a horrible, insane person who's just out to kill.
Well, and interesting thing about Michael is that I even made a note to myself, why was he so hard to kill? Because that didn't make sense to me. And then as I was doing research on this, I did read that they talked about that specifically. Like that was a choice they made. It wasn't just, it's more fun if they can't kill him and he keeps killing people. But there was this idea about Halloween and the idea of the Samhain, which was sort of like the spirit of Halloween, that they were trying to weave into these movies. And they thought that that was sort of like the spirit of Halloween is like the personification of evil. And they're basically the idea they came to was that you cannot kill evil.
Yeah.
That is what he is more than just a guy who's a psycho, but that he is like evil walking the earth. And no matter how many times you shoot him or stab him or stick him with a knitting needle, you can't kill him. And so I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting.
And I like that because you think of, and these movies are obviously very different, but you think of like Silence of the Lambs and Buffalo Bill as he does, as is crazy as he is, he has a motivation for what he's doing and why he's doing it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of dialogue with Buffalo Bill. And so when he's killed, you believe, yes, he is a human. Yes, he is crazy. Mm-hmm. But he can die. And with Michael Myers, he never says a word. He's just this weird breathing person.
Yeah.
I don't even think he's credited as Michael Myers. They call him the Shape.
Oh, and it's interesting.
Just, yeah, he's essentially like the boogeyman. Uh-huh. And I think having him have no dialogue, and the fact that you see his face as a kid, but never as an adult.
Don't you see it
kind of in shadow. She
okay.
pulls his, Jamie Lee Curtis pulls his mask off at
right.
one. And he almost looks a little disfigured.
Yeah.
But even that, it's hard to tell the way it's shot. Mm-hmm. You never get a clear look at his face, but he does. It's almost as if he's supernatural, and it's absurd. It's mm-hmm. but this is an absurd movie, you know. did you read who was considered for Loomis's role?
No.
So, Peter Cushing was a possibility, and he turned it down, and then his frequent collaborator, co-star Christopher Lee was considered, and he turned it down and apparently later said that he really regretted not taking it.
Okay.
But I like imagining that part with those two guys just because
yeah.
they're distinct personalities and actors.
That would have been really cool. Either yeah. one of them.
But Pleasance, I think, is good in the role. I think he seems a little bit unhinged himself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like his interactions with that, the sheriff is, he's kind of like originally kind of rolling his eyes at him. Like, this guy's fucking weird.
Now, Pleasance, I don't know much about him. I haven't really ever seen him in anything else, but he kind of strikes me as a guy who was maybe a better actor than this movie required.
Yeah.
And while he does a good job in it, he almost feels like he doesn't want to be I don't know. I almost got this sense of him like understanding that he was better than the schlock that he was in right here. but he apparently he's really stuck with it because he was in quite a few of these.
I think he kind of sells it a little bit. I feel like he's into it. He was at the very least in the second one because I've seen that one and he's in it.
I see. I'm looking through. I see him in 1, 2, 3, Halloween 4, Halloween 5.
Oh, wow.
Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Maybe that's 6. I don't know. But yeah, he really made a career out of this.
Fuck. I guess I need to watch these. He was in THX, which was George Lucas' first movie.
Interesting.
And then he played a Blofeld in a few, at least one Bond movie.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And perhaps is the most Dr. Evil looking of the Blofelds.
Right. God, I didn't even think about that watching this, so... Mm. Well, I don't know what else to say about this.
It's not by today's standards super scary. There's a few shots I like when he kills the guy in the kitchen.
Okay.
And with the knife and the guy is basically hanging in midair.
Yeah.
And the way he kind of cocks his head from side to side, sort of just observing it. Mm-hmm. And there's one shot where Jamie Lee Curtis is upstairs trying to avoid him. Okay. And all of a sudden, he doesn't pop out and scare her. He just sort of, there's like a, I can't remember if it's a doorway or just sort of a dark corner. and he just sort of slowly appears behind her. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, yeah.
Behind the shadows. And that, I think, is genuinely pretty creepy.
Uh-huh.
So there's a few shots that I think are pretty scary, pretty creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I enjoyed it. I don't know that I'll revisit it a lot, but it kind of does make me want to watch some of the other ones to see what else they do with it. Do you have any of them that you see? Do you think they get better? Do you think they stay about the same?
I think it's worth watching David Gordon Green's kind of update on it.
Okay. Quote
unquote sequel, which I think John Carpenter has sort of given his blessing.
Okay.
Because it's obviously it's similar in terms of its tone, but it's updated. There's some pretty genuinely scary parts. I saw it with Mo in theaters, and I love watching horror movies with Mo when there's okay. some genuinely suspenseful stuff, because she becomes that person in the theater where she's going, okay, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't know where he is. I don't know where he is. So that one's worth watching. It has a good supporting cast. It has Judy Greer. It's got a few other people you'll recognize, but that one's good. Halloween 3 Season of the Witch is insane.
Okay.
He isn't in it. It's about this company that makes Halloween masks that end up killing children.
Are we sure it's related to this?
It's so fucking crazy. The original Halloween movie exists within that universe.
Okay.
As a movie. It's so strange. It's bizarre.
Did John Carpenter direct that?
No. If he had anything to do with it, he maybe produced it.
Okay.
But weird. He definitely writer directed. I think he wrote the second one, which, spoiler alert for the second one, Michael Myers ends up being Laurie's brother.
Oh, okay.
It's very weird. And I think
did,
that's why...
I did wonder if there was a connection between them.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why he was so obsessed with her particularly. But...
Yeah. I think John Carpenter has gone on record as saying that was a poor choice, and that's why the reboot has chosen to ignore it. And I think that was a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely say at least the David Gordon Green one
is okay.
Checking out.
It's got Will Patton in it. I like him.
Which one's Will Patton?
Will Patton was in Armageddon with... Yes. And you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
He's always just generally fine.
Yeah. He's funny in it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I should check some of those out.
Yeah.
Maybe next Halloween or November, since that was where we are now.
Let's celebrate Christmas Eve. Talking about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Damn it. Oh, man. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for Halloween. Another successful spooky month.
Yes.
Congratulations to us all.
So stupid. Why are we still doing this?
I don't know. All right. Well, let's end that. Rob, if somebody's looking for us online, where can they do it?
You can find us on Facebook, where you can like us. We're on Twitter at @2geeksmovies. You can email us at twogeeksatthemovies@gmail.com. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Podomatic.
All right. Very good. Well, thanks for joining us, and we will catch you next week on Two Geeks at the Movies.
Bye, folks.
See ya.